Get ready for a journey into the heart of Bridgeport politics with In Absentia, a new podcast from Connecticut Public's investigative team, The Accountability Project. Learn about the city's past and present political dysfunction and the systems that enable it. Tune in wherever you get your podcasts.
Funding provided by Robert Yeager and the Tau Foundation.
I like the devil in your chin. I even like the tricky way you grin, yes, baby. Still, you ain't nowhere. You ain't no kind of catch. Doggone you, woman, your socks don't match. Your teeth have that.
You know, Fats Waller hits upon one of the many paradoxes and quandaries posed by the topic of our show today, socks. Which is, I mean, there is no other item of clothing, with the possible exception of gloves, but I say no. There's no other article of clothing, or coupled article of clothing, which so reliably separates from its mate. I mean, I don't know what there would be, but I mean, socks... Socks are capricious. They vanish. We don't know what happens one of them. Roy Blunt Jr., in writing about this problem many years ago, also talked about the fact that quite frequently and capriciously, it's one of the two socks in a new pair of socks that goes away, right? And he says the poets, I'm quoting from long distant memory, but it says something along the lines of the poets have written inadequately of the pleasures of sliding on a very new pair of socks. All of these things are true. Many more things are true. And we're going to do a show about socks today because you need this show. You need it more than you need a show about some of the things that are troubling your mind right now. We'd like to trouble your mind about other things. A little bit later in the show, we will especially trouble your mind when we explain to you via one of our guests that it is quite possible that there's sort of a black market for used socks. The people who want used socks want them for foul and fetishistic purposes. They want dirty, stinky socks. I don't know, you can complete that circle, but or we will. And then at the end of the show today, I insisted on this, and I now realize that, like so many of the things that I insist on, this is a dubious premise. Because Sox the cat, who was the Clinton cat, who witnessed all of the dramas of the Clinton era, or at least could have, has stayed with me. I mean, not literally. I don't have Sox here. Sox is dead. But, he's just sort of stayed in my mind as the example of an especially enigmatic presidential pet. And also, he, at the end of his run, at the end of the presidential run, he didn't leave with the Clintons. He left with Betty Curry, who was Bill Clinton's personal secretary. And therein lies a tale. But to begin with, we really just got to get right at the heart of socks, qua socks. And to do that, Kim Adrian, she's sort of the reason we're doing this show, because she was on a different show, and then it came out that she had written a whole book about socks, and we said, oh, well, we're doing another show with you. She's the author of the memoir, The 27th Letter of the Alphabet. Her most recent book, Dear Knausgard, was published in September. It's it'd be a hard book to describe, but it's a set of responses to the great Scandinavian writer. She teaches at Grub Street in downtown Boston, and she joins us now. Hi, Kim Adrian. Welcome back.
Hi, Colin. Thanks. It's nice to be back.
We should say your sock book is part of a series of books called, I believe, Object Lessons, right? It's the kind of thing we like to do. I didn't even know this existed, but sort of a deep dive into some fairly quotidian object.
Yeah, totally. I think that you'd probably like a lot of them. Hamburgers and drones and dust.
Now, did you... I mean, being selected to write the socks book, I mean, did you say, look, I'd like to write one of those books? Or did you say, I've got a socks book in me?
I think I originally wanted to write about knitting. Mm-hmm. But the problem with writing about knitting is that it's like an activity, not an object.
Right.
Yes. So I don't know why I picked socks. Actually, I probably picked socks because I'd never knit a sock, but I think I'm very attracted to like the small overlooked things. Like I tend to write about that kind of stuff a lot. So I just said I'd write a book about socks, and then all of a sudden I was writing a book about socks.
Well, that's what happens when you say you're going to write a book about socks.
Yeah,
you wind up writing a book about socks. So, but we should say that the earliest known socks, I am descended from Neanderthal. I have a great deal of Neanderthal DNA. We, our people did not wear socks. We didn't need socks. We didn't want socks. We want our land back. That's what we want. But so the earliest known socks are on some much more poncy kind of early human named Otzi. Tell us about Otzi. His socks, we should emphasize, were definitely not knitted.
No, knitted socks took a while for us to figure out. Otzi was a Copper Age huntsman who was wandering around in the Alps. There's actually kind of a dramatic story attached to him. They think that he was probably being chased because he had an arrow head wound in a shoulder that seems like it was recent, right before his death. Anyway, this is about 5,000 years ago, and he got enclosed in ice. And so he was perfectly preserved, which is really rare, especially for clothing. So we have this amazing 5,000-year-old outfit, and it included shoes and socks, and that they were kind of all of one thing. So they were three-part object. There was the leather outer covering, and inside that was a kind of net made out of rope, and the net was holding a bunch of hay in place. So the hay was the sock. That's the earliest thing that we can kind of call a sock.
Yeah, and I think we may be stretching the point or the definition or the sock. I mean, it's borderline, wow, my ankles are cold. What could I tie on there to, so they wouldn't be so cold? But maybe that is, that maybe ultimately, I mean, one of the questions you really try to explore here is why socks? Why are there socks at all? Albert Einstein, the smartest man in the world, did not wear socks, but the rest of us do. So I don't know, is there an easy answer to why socks?
Well, I think Otzi was smart to wear socks because he was hiking in the Alps. And one of the reasons we wear socks is so that we don't get frostbite or trench foot. Those are two of the most dangerous things that we can have happen to our feet. And that's basically when both those conditions will lead to vasoconstriction. So all the blood vessels will constrict and your foot doesn't get any more nourishment from the blood, and they basically die. The flesh dies. So he was smart to do it for that reason. He's clambering over a bunch of stones and rocks, and we don't really have that much protection. Like, our feet do an incredible job of, with very little equipment on their own. There's just a few fat pads, a little bit of extra tough skin, and some nails. So if you're going to climb the Alps, I think wearing shoes and socks is probably a good idea, even if you're a Copper Age guy.
Right. Well, as you point out, too, the feet have 52 bones and 66 joints and a lot of nerve endings, too. There's one of the reasons that we torture people. Well, not we, you and I, but why people get tortured by beating on their feet is because the feet are, in fact, unbelievably sensitive. It probably makes sense to be choosy about what we put on them.
It does, and it does. I mean, that's a funny question. The feet have more nerve endings per square centimeter than any other part of the body. And I've read that it's between 7,000 and 8,000 nerve endings per foot. You kind of want to protect them for that reason, but actually they're there because we walk on them and we need that information. So a lot of people who are like barefoot advocates would say it's much better to go barefoot and know exactly what's happening underneath your feet than to wear shoes and socks.
Right, which I think makes a certain amount of sense. I will also say that one thing that a memory that was stirred up by your book is that my mother, when I was growing up, the kids in my neighborhood at that particular moment in history, it was in the 1870s, the kids in my neighborhood, they wanted to wear their sneakers with no socks. It was not cool to wear socks. And so I wanted to be like they were, and my mother didn't. And she told me, she got the name of the president wrong. She said that Herbert Hoover's son had died from a blister he got from not wearing socks. And then she would say he was the most powerful man in the world and he couldn't save his son. It's actually Calvin Coolidge, but she's kind of not wrong about the rest of it.
she's not. And she got the alliteration right. Herbert Hoover, Calvin Coolidge. But yeah, he was 16. He was a 16-year-old boy. And it was in 1924, which was 4 years before penicillin was invented. So he got a really nasty blister, and I think it was less than a week before his blood got poisoned from the infection and he died. You know, Albert Einstein was not wearing socks. I don't know when he stopped wearing socks, but presumably after penicillin was widely available. So it wouldn't have been that smart pre-penicillin.
we haven't really pinned down those two dates.
Right.
But his whole point was that he explained this in a letter to a brother or a cousin or something like that, that he realized that when you wear a sock, your shoe wears a hole in the sock, often at the big toe. But he just thought, what was the point? What was the point of wearing something that your shoe is going to wear a hole in? And you can't argue with that because he's Albert Einstein. You maybe could argue about it in other ways. So your book kind of gets all into all kinds of fascinating areas. Maybe we should just talk a little bit about one of the things that you really explore in some depth is the kind of question of where is the sock's role in fashion, and using a lot of semiotics and fancy sources like Roland Barthes and people like that, you sort of get into this idea of the sock as the small gesture. But say more about that.
Okay. So when I was writing this book, 2016, I don't think it's such a big deal anymore, but there was this big hashtag that was kind of all over the place that was sock game. And the idea was to show off your socks on Twitter or wherever, especially men, your fancy socks with this hashtag sock game. And I just thought that was really interesting in light of some of the things that Barthes says in this great collection of essays called, I think it's called The Language of Clothes or The Language of Fashion, I'm not sure. But what he argues is that the traditional thinking about why we started wearing clothing is that we started because of necessity, modesty, and decoration. And each of those is fascinating in and of themselves when you start looking at them, especially decoration. But Roland Barthes argued that actually we're also communicating with our clothes. And he said that especially after the French Revolution in his home country of France, men especially started dressing more democratically so that you couldn't tell someone's station in life from their outfit. Everybody kind of wore the same, what he called Quaker suit. But what you had to start doing was looking at the details, which he called the vestimes, these tiny little units of meaning. So like a little tie pin or a certain special cut to your shirt or something like that. And this sock game is just a really obvious example of that.
Right. I mean, you know, here in America, perhaps the equivalent would be the man in the gray flannel suit. Mm-hmm. And if everybody is going to wear the same gray flannel suit, if we are going to be participants in conformity, then the question is, when can we nonconform? And the sock, you know, used in that way. And I have a lot of, you know, impish flashy socks. I'm not wearing them during the pandemic because no one cares, but I will revive them someday. The question is this an act of boldness or an act of cowardice, right? I mean, if you're going to reserve your gestures, your most flamboyant and colorful gestures for the sock, you're essentially saying you're not really prepared to lay it on the line, but perhaps I have this wrong.
Well, I think you're right. I think that's really interesting. But I think that socks are so interesting that way. Like for centuries, they've been knitted with really elaborate designs that nobody sees. And there's even in Iceland, there are these like shoe inserts, which are just the sole of a sock. They're knitted and you just wear them on the inside of your shoe and they're incredibly beautiful and decorative. But like literally nobody can ever see those because they're underneath your foot the whole time. So I guess that's a really interesting aspect of decoration when it's private and it's just like something that you know is there.
On the other hand, it also could be argued, just to go back to Roy Blunt's earlier point, that socks were the early sweatpants in the sense that they're, you know, a good pair of socks, a nice pair of socks, a new pair of socks as you pull them on. There is something very comfortable and comforting about them. There is, since you mentioned Iceland, I'll go Scandinavian, there is some hygge going on with, at least with sort of good socks, right? Good socks make you feel good in a way that very few other items of clothing do.
They totally do. And I think there's, I think that's probably because the feet have so many nerve endings. Mm-hmm. There's actual evidence that warm socks can calm the whole nervous system. And actually there's a study of like women achieving sexual orgasm much more readily when they're wearing socks, probably for that very reason.
Women so and, that, and Elliot Spitzer, apparently. Although, actually, that may not be true, that Elliot Spitzer thing. Hold on to your thought, because I'm interrupting you right now. But just since it came up. So there was this idea that Elliot Spitzer wore kind of knee-length black socks and kept them on in his encounters with prostitutes. Although that turns out to be something put out by Roger Stone, and probably says more about Roger Stone and how kinky his mind is than Elliot Spitzer. So I would like to at least sort of semi fact check that particular base canard about Elliot Spitzer. But anyway, back to you and socks and pleasure.
No, I just think that you're right, that a pair of socks just feels incredibly comforting. And I think it's because the whole nervous system is calm when the feet are warm.
Now, one thing that you paid attention to that maybe another sock book writer, of which, according to you, there's basically only one anyway. He's long gone. But right. Another sock book writer probably wouldn't have spent quite as much time thinking about the darning of socks. Mm. Even though we know from Eleanor Rigby that darning your socks in the night when there's nobody there and nobody cares is really, you know, the ultimate statement, the nadir of loneliness and a feeling as though you're kind of doing something that you have to do, but it isn't necessarily fulfilling. It's a necessity. Mm. And this is something you explore a lot, this whole idea of darning socks, up to and including the recognition of a Hitler body double or something. We can maybe come to that. But just talk about the darning of socks and whether there's any kind of chop wood, carry water fulfillment that comes from it.
Oh, yeah, totally. I think that's a really good comparison, actually. I mean, I spend at the end of the book a lot of time, like you're saying, talking about darning socks, mending, the idea of keeping, because I've just been discussing the incredible, voracious cycles of fast fashion and the huge number of socks. I mean, that's just one tiny part of the human wardrobe. But, you know, we produce over 80 billion socks, I think it is, per year. Every year, 80 billion, again and again.
81 billion, but who's counting?
81 billion, yeah. So, and so the idea is, you know, fast fashion, it's disposable. And this is our economic engine now. It's just like consumption and disposal, consumption and disposal. So I try to spend some time looking at the idea of just like what happens in the middle of that creation destruction cycle. And that's where these very plain, it's, you know, when there was a cottage industry of sock making, it belonged to a category called plain work. And plain work was necessary needlework. It was knitting of socks and stockings. It was the making of underwear. It was the mending of anything that needed mending. And then there was fancy work, which was like pineapple bags and laced oilies, totally unnecessary things that were just, could be really beautiful, but weren't necessary. And so I think your example of Eleanor Rigby is just so perfect, because we've always, for some reason, why do we denigrate the plain? And I think looking at the sock as closely as I did gave me an even greater appreciation of like the small and the mundane and the plain. Because the sock is so connected to these things. So, yeah, I really advocate mending and elevating the plain work and the kind of activities that are seen as unglamorous or unworthy. And actually, I'm saying I think they're really worth a lot. And it's great if you can mend your socks instead of just going out and buying a new pair and tossing the old pair.
Yes, there'll be less hydrofracking. You know, yeah. I mean, you want to save the planet. Don't just keep buying new socks every time they wear out. Yeah, you give us, among the many voices you give us in this book, you give us that of Aeneas Nin, who says something to that effect, that she wants to feel fully alive right out to her very fingertips. And since it's Aeneas Nin, we know exactly what she means by that. But she also has to do stuff like darn socks, where she does not feel totally alive. And so that's like too humble an activity. In the following segment, by the way, we are going to explain to Aeneas Nin, apostrophically, that she could have made sexy time and paid attention to her socks, and it all would have just come together in a beautiful way. But before we do that, there's so many other, you know, sort of sock rituals that we haven't touched upon yet. I mean, not fetishistic ones, but just sort of they are a thing we deal with every day. So let's hear Archie Bunker explain socks and the order in which things must be put on.
Hold it. What are you doing here? What? What about the other foot? There ain't no sock on it. I'll get to it. Don't you know that the whole world puts on a sock and a sock and a shoe and a shoe? I like to take care of one foot at a time. That's the dumbest thing I ever heard in my life. It's just as quick my way.
Wait a minute, that ain't the prank.
You see what I'm talking about? Don't keep doing it. Listen to me. Suppose there's a fire in the house and you got to run for your life. Your way, all you got on is one shoe and a sock. My way, you got on a sock and a sock. You see, you're even.
Suppose it's raining or snowing outside. Your way with a sock on each foot, my feet would get wet. My way, with a sock and a shoe on one foot, I could hop around and stay dry.
So some very Socratic dialogue going on there. But it is one of these kind of private questions. I mean, there's a whole separate question about if you are the kind of person who is going to be wearing slacks, whether you should put your socks on first, because ultimately the slack has to come down over the sock. So it's you know, theoretically, socks first, then you pull on the slack. Everything's kind of in the right position. But as you also suggest, socks... The putting on of socks, particularly if we do it that way, is a moment of liminality. We did an entire show about liminality, but it is a moment where we're kind of crossing from not having anything on to maybe having one little thing on. You cite Lolita, the first glimpse, I believe, of Lolita as some evidence of that. But yeah, perhaps you could dilate on that a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, I spent a lot of time kind of looking at some of the paintings of Egon Schiele. He painted a lot of nudes wearing socks, or seeming as if they were kind of wearing socks, the skin tone changes. And Georges Bataille, and certain ideas about like what the verticality of the human form does to our psychology. And the idea that we're kind of constantly striving towards the upper reaches, towards some higher plane. And that as soon as we put on our socks, we've kind of severed our connection to the earth. Like that's the first thing we do every day. Well, those of us who wear socks, that severs that connection. So I think that's the real liminal aspect of them that I think is fun to think about.
And it may also explain once again why we might have some very specific anxieties about which socks we're going to put on. If we're going to do that, if we're going to sever our connection with the earth, or if we're going to begin some kind of journey toward the clouds, or at least some new state of upwardness, some verticality, it's important that the socks we get are right. And so let's hear from Seinfeld, a series which occurred somewhere between Roland Barthes and the Bloomsbury Books Object Lessons series, but belongs with all of them. Let's hear a little Seinfeld contemplation before we go to a break.
It's good, but...
But what?
Ultimately, I don't think they'll stay up.
No, they'll stay up.
For a while, yes, but not in the long run.
But that's why I got you the tighter ones.
Don't forget about those. Why do you keep mentioning those?
What do you want?
I want a decent sock that's comfortable, that'll stay on my foot.
And there you have the verticality. There's the other problem, right? The sock has to also stay up in the position we want it left on if we are going to become much more vertical. All right. Go ahead. Would you want to finish up with that?
No, you just picked two of my favorite sock comedy skits, though. It's good to hear them.
From the vast panoply from which we had to choose. All right, Kim Adrian is with us. She is going to join us and another guest for our next segment, which will involve, if you have little ones or something, I don't think it's going to be any too upsetting, but we will be talking about sex and the relationship to socks. And, that's all I'm going to say at this moment, because I don't want to alarm you. We'll be back in just a second.
The longer you wear them, the stronger they get. Sometimes I think I should wash them, but something inside me says, no, no, not yet, not yet, not yet, not yet, not yet. Black socks, they never get dirty. The longer you wear them, the stronger they get. Sometimes I think I should wash them, but something inside me says, no, no, not yet, not yet, not yet, not yet, not yet.
I want to thank my co-stars. Leo, Margot Robbie, Margot Robbie's feet, Margaret Qualley's feet, Dakota Fanning's feet. Seriously, Quentin has separated more women from their shoes than the TSA.
That's Brad Pitt. Yes, we are about to move into a whole other area of socks. And still with us, Kim Adrian is the author of the memoir, The 27th Letter of the Alphabet. Her most recent book is Dear Nausgaard. And yes, she wrote a book entirely about socks. Joining us now also is Kara Mavros, a writer based in New York. We'll meet her in just a second. But let's have Kim tee this up for us a little bit. So when we say the word fetishes, we're talking presumably about all kinds of things, about a spectrum of all sorts of things that a person could have an unnatural sexual interest in, or maybe unnatural is too judgmental. But it turns out an awful lot of those things are right below the human ankle. Maybe you could say a little bit more about that.
Well, I could say that there's a pretty recent study that says that I think it's 47% of all sexual fetishes are foot related. So that would include shoe fetishes, sock fetishes, and foot fetishes.
And and there's Freud has a word for at least the foot part of this, podophilia, not to be confused with other kinds of ophilias, but pod, like podiatrist. Some of this, what were you about to say?
I was going to say that Freud actually called podophilia coprophilic, which means like an obsessed with feces. So I think he was talking about the smells, which actually, if you don't wear shoes and you don't wear socks, your feet are never going to smell, because all those sweat glands are actually of a type that just basically produce saline. So there's no smell unless you're trapping your feet in a shoe and things are kind of stewing there. But that's an aside.
Right. So, you chronicle all kinds of people who've had, pretty deep interest in socks, including a man who had to be chained to his bed by his mother, which that was my fetish, actually, was I wanted to be chained to my bed by my mother, and she would just give me these stinky socks to make me stop thinking about it. So it's kind of the reverse of what you describe. These descriptions you have of people owning enormous collections of a carpet of 4,000 pairs of socks, 18 inches deep on the floor, hanging from furniture lampshades and in the microwave when these people were actually arrested. I don't know exactly why they would be arrested, but they were. Before we bring Kara aboard, you're probably unsurprised by the story she's about to tell. People want this for some reason. Mm-hmm. Possibly Freud's reason. Although he also thought money was a substitute for poop, too. So maybe there's like a complicated cycle going here. Well, first of all, Kara, welcome to our show. This is one of those essays where the headline kind of tells an awful lot of the story. The headline or title being, I sold my used socks to a stranger on the internet for $60, and I'd do it again. I'm sorry for laughing in the middle of that. Kara, tell us that story.
Well, thanks, Colin. Yeah, it's pretty straightforward, but I have dabbled in the fetish industry, maybe 5 or 6 years ago now. So I took a group trip with some girlfriends to a theme park in Florida, posted a normal picture, what I thought was, you know, not anything that would cause too much excitement online, but just maybe 6 or 7 of us girls in activewear, wearing sneakers, socks, something like great day. And this strange account, or I should say random account, commented on it and said, cool, was it fun? And I responded, I said, yeah, it was a fun day, it was good. And he said, oh, I've never been there. Is it a lot of walking? Was it really hot out today? And I said, yeah, it was pretty hot, but really fun, like totally worth it, totally worth the Florida heat. And that's where things took a turn a little bit. And he said, cool, I have one more question, but this one's kind of different. Would you maybe sell me the socks you wore today? And I was like, okay, this took a turn. It's not what I was expecting, but why not, I guess. I was just intrigued, honestly. So I said yes, we were DMing, and then I gave him my Snapchat eventually because I thought that was a little less invasive than a phone number. So then, yeah, we had this arrangement set up. I would send him my socks. He said he would pay anything, including the price of the ticket for the theme park for the day. So I said, great. So $60, I was sending him some photos of my feet, you know, and he would screenshot them. And I knew what it was about, but I didn't really think too much about it. But this relationship went on for a little while, close to a year. And, you know, as I got more comfortable in this and a little bit bolder, I asked him one time, why does it matter if they're dirty? Because he repeatedly would ask me, like, oh, are you sure they're safe? Are you sure that they're not going to get washed? Your roommates aren't going to wash the socks? And I was like, no, like, they're fine. So I asked him, why do you want them to be dirty? And he said, oh, I just really like the thrill of cleaning really dirty things. So I guess in the end, he wasn't totally comfortable sharing his fetish with me, but he was comfortable enough to reach out to a stranger and ask for the socks. Mm-hmm. So it was interesting, but,
you're saying that you don't really take him at his word that, you know, it is possible at the end of whatever cycle he was involved with your dirty socks, that he did take some pleasure in cleaning them up. But you're suggesting it seems more likely that he wanted dirty, smelly socks for a much more specific and bodily reason than throwing them in the Maytag.
That's what I would have to assume from the amount of times he was following up. And that's what I would have to assume. But yeah, it is possible that after some, I don't know.
We have to bring Kim back into this conversation, although I'm not sure Kim is eager to come storming back into this conversation. let's pretend she is anyway. You know, so let's be, Kim, French semioticians about this or something. It seems to me that, you know, that rather than going with Freud, but being kind of a little bit connected anyway to Freud's thinking, there's this sort of humiliation here, right? There's a way in which if you were going to seek out and spend time, intimate time, with somebody's dirty socks, somebody you don't even know their dirty socks, there's some kind of rehearsed humiliation involved there. But perhaps you have other thoughts.
Oh, well, that's really, that didn't occur to me, but I think you might be right just because of the idea of feet being, you know, dirty. But I always have thought of it more as, and maybe this is because in a way I've had my own fetishistic relationship to socks, not sexual really, but when my kids were little, it was really hard for me to throw out their socks. Mm-hmm. I just got like, I think because they're shaped like feet and they grew out of them and the foot is such an intimate part of the body. It was just, I had to just like create bags of old socks. And then eventually when I felt really brave, I'd throw them all out, but it was ridiculously emotional for me. So I always think of, I guess, sock fetishism as being related to that, like somehow believing that the essence of someone attaches to something that they wore. And it's kind of like in this sexual mode, like this guy who was buying Kara's socks, that it's a stand-in for an actual person. So it's this kind of fear-based desire. But I think the humiliation aspect of it is interesting, and definitely could see how that could be part of it too.
That could be my own massive set of psychological problems speaking. Who knows? So Kara, I mean, on the one hand, this isn't like, you know, some fetish where some guy wants to spank you. I mean, your hands are clean, so to speak, here. You send the socks off and that's the end of it. But did you feel any sense of violation or encroachment knowing that somebody was up to no good with your socks?
You know, when I think about it, yeah, it's a little bit unorthodox, sure. But on the other hand, it's like, these are dirty socks that cost, a couple bucks tops anyways. Like, I'm going to throw them away and get a new pair soon. How do I know that someone's not going to dig through my trash and do the same thing? I might as well make a couple bucks. So, I mean.
Now I'm worried about your neighborhood. I thought, one of the things that was very touching in your essay is that you did feel, at least in some remote corner of your psyche, a little bit affirmed by this, right? You hadn't always liked your feet.
Yeah, I mean, not in any grand, special way where it was a big, discomfort of mine. But I've never thought of feet as an especially sexy part of the body, especially my feet. There's something, I think they're pretty normal, but I don't know. It never really clicked in my brain that that's something that other people would find desirable. So yeah, there's a little bit of flattery, I guess you could say. And yeah, I figured if he's coming to me, a stranger, asking for this, I don't know, he probably doesn't have anyone else in his life that would pick him up on this, so I might as well see if I can help.
Right. Well, listen, that is, you know, that is the definition of generosity, except that you were getting $50. All right. So, listen, we have to stop there because we'll lose our FCC license if we talk about this anymore. But thanks so much to Kim Adrian, who's sort of our anchor guest here today. And check out her books like The 27th Letter of the Alphabet or Dear Nausgaard, or her book about socks for the Object Lessons series. Kara Mavros is a writer based in New York. Hopefully this won't be like the first paragraph in her New York Times obit 70 years from now. And I have to say, tell one thing here, because it just only fits here. So this is the first day in many, many, many months that our show, that the technical producing part of our show is not being done by Kat Pastor, who we don't really know all that well. We love Kat Pastor because she's just like this no-drama tech producer. Instead, it's being engineered. I should say the tech producer today is our boss, Katie Tularski. So we'll probably be written up for this whole conversation. But when we first started talking about this at a meeting on Monday, the minute Betsy Kaplan mentioned the title of Kara's piece, Kat Pastor perked right up. I still didn't understand what was being discussed. And Kat Pastor brightened right up and goes, "Oh yeah, you can make a lot of money doing that." I thought, oh, well, they're just, you know, things that you don't get to know about people, particularly if you meet them and then a pandemic starts right after that. So we're going to take a little break here. We're going to come back and we are going to talk about another kind of socks, a socks that is a cat.
Those silk shiny stockings that I wear when I'm with you, I wear 'cause you told me that you dig that crazy hue. Do we think of romance when we go to a dance?
And we're back. And so, as I alluded to, a Kat Pastor is not here today. I'm somewhat alarmed about what she might be doing when she's not here. But we are so excited. Katie Tularski, the big kid, who is our boss, has taken over, and she's the technical producer today. And as you can tell, things are going swimmingly. Betsy Kaplan, senior producer of the Colin McEnroe Show, is the producer of today's episode. And I believe the latest is that we're not going to be on the air. If you're listening here on Wednesday, anyway, I believe tomorrow, because of the committee vote on and debate on the Supreme Court nomination of Amy Coney Barrett, we probably will not be on the air, but we're going to be back on Friday with an episode of The Nose, where we're going to be talking about, among other things, American Utopia. This is the new David Byrne concert show, which is turned into a HBO special, a movie shot by Spike Lee. And I've already upset people by saying I don't like it. So it could get nasty. It could get ferocious. Right now, though, we're going to talk about socks some more, but not about the kind that you wear on your feet. First of all, let me just set this up. Let me set it up. So in 1992, 1993, as the Clintons came to Washington, D.C. as a family, we were all intrigued to find out that they had a black and white cat named Sox. It was a street cat, a stray cat, I think, from Little Rock, Arkansas, that had jumped into Chelsea Clinton's arms. And so Sox accompanied us through the somewhat storm-tossed Clinton era, and had his eyes opened, his cat eyes opened in ways that we probably did too. And there's a lot that we can say about Sox. We're going to have a guest here, though, Chloe Bryan, the deputy editor of Mashable's shopping section covering tech and lifestyle products. Previously, she was a culture reporter for Mashable. She wrote a piece about the GOP investigation of Sox the cat. It was titled "Remember When Republicans Went After Sox the Cat." So, first of all, Chloe, welcome to the show.
Hi, thank you for having me.
So, we probably have to set this up a little bit more. So, Sox, and you sound too young to have experienced this as directly as I did, but Sox was kind of a celebrity. Sox, in the way that presidential pets either can or can't be. Sox was kind of a celebrity. And so what happened, right? People sent mail to Sox, and there your story begins. I'll let you take up the thread.
Yeah. So first of all, presidential pets are usually super popular. People really like them, but Sox was a particularly popular pet. And part of the reason for that was because he pretty much had free reign of the house and the grounds. So he would always like walk around the lawn, probably because he was trying to avoid the dog Buddy, who he did not like. But press photographers would carry catnip with them in their pockets and try to like lure him closer to them for photos. And so people saw tons of photos of Sox. He was everywhere, and kids especially liked him. So kids would send Sox a bunch of letters and cards in the mail, and the White House would respond to that mail pretending to be Sox, because like if you're a kid, of course you would love a letter from a cat instead of a human. But that mail habit got Sox into some trouble at one point with Dan Burton, who was a representative from Indiana at the time. At one point he sent a letter to President Clinton saying that it was wrong for the White House to use taxpayer money to send mail from Sox. And in this letter, which was reported out by the Chicago Tribune at the time, this is my favorite quote from it. He says, "Who pays for the postage? If it comes out of the White House mail budget, why are the taxpayers being made to pay for your felines fan club?" So Sox was really in hot water at that point.
Although we need to mention, I mean, Dan Burton, he was one of the Hillary Clinton at one point talked about a vast right-wing conspiracy to get the Clintons. Burton was very much part of that. He went after them about everything. Like many of the critics of the Clintons, his hands were not clean. It came out that during his first marriage, I think he fathered a child out of wedlock with somebody else. And he eventually got in trouble for abusing his franking privilege, right? It turned out he was sending out too much mail.
Yeah. So as you said, he was involved in quite a few political scandals during his career, and his mail use definitely wasn't the most severe one. But at one point, this was pretty far past the Sox era of things. He ranked in a study as the fifth biggest user of congressional mail. And a lot of that mail was basically anti-Affordable Care Act messaging, which even his challengers in his Republican primary were like, this is a little bit much for your congressional mail use. So it kind of makes Sox's fan mail seem like small potatoes at that point.
Yes, and quite harmless. we should say that Sox, I mean, you know, there have been, you know, presidential pets. They come and go. President Trump, of course, has never had a pet, but everybody else pretty much does. There was something about Sox, and I think some of it also was that Sox always had this slightly alarmed look on his face. But also there's a way in which a cat is a little bit implacable and hard to read. And anyway, as a result, people did all kinds of things. I mean, there was a video game that was going to exist that involved Sox, I believe, saving the world from nuclear Armageddon. Sox,
yes, wound up, yeah, very you weird video game.
You want to say
super
something
weird
about that? Yeah, go ahead.
Oh, no, I mean, I have nothing to add to what you said, but it was just a strange idea that I wish had been executed fully, because I would love to play it.
There was a guy who came along later, I think his name was Tom Curtin, who actually started a GoFundMe. He got the rights to the game somehow, and he was still, like, years later going to do it. I don't think it ever sort of reached fruition, but it was. And like Sox and Bill Clinton, where they were on a stamp in the Central African Republic, they had a Sox stamp. So there just was sort of a way in which Sox had charisma. But Chloe, as you suggested, the problem was that starting around 1996, the Clintons added a dog named Buddy to their menagerie, and Sox and Buddy hated each other, right?
They did. They did not get along at all, to the extent that when the Clintons left the White House, Sox actually went to live with Bill Clinton's secretary, who people might remember as a prominent figure in the Monica Lewinsky scandal. So he went to live with her, and Buddy stayed with the family. Sox lived with her until 2009 when he died. But when he died, I think he was almost 20. So he lived an extremely long life for a cat.
Yes, actually, Buddy did not enjoy such a long life or a similar fate. But yes, Bill Clinton famously joked about this, saying, I had more difficulty with Sox and Buddy than I did with the Jews and Palestinians. I had less success in getting them to get along. So he did. He gave Sox to Betty Curry, so Betty Curry was his secretary, the Mrs. Landingham of the Clinton administration. And her role in Monica Lewinsky was, I think, that she procured some of the gifts,
yes,
you know, little books and stuff like that, that Clinton, yes, would give to Monica Lewinsky. But there was also a sense that, you know, maybe she and Sox both knew too much. So why not put them together and have them live out their days?
They probably had a lot to talk about.
Yes, I would think so. But yeah, I still do regard Sox as, in many ways, I mean, there were other presidential pets. In fact, I think Dan Burton talked about the fact that that the Bush 41 had Millie, and in fact Barbara Bush, she put out at least one book that was ostensibly written by Millie the dog, and I believe Hillary Clinton did a Sox book too, right?
Yeah. So one of Burton's suggestions in that letter we were talking about was that the Clintons do the same thing with their children's books. So this book about Millie got published, and then they used the proceeds to pay for that pet's snail mail correspondence. Mm-hmm. But the children's book about Sox, the proceeds from that were donated to the National Park Service. So they were already accounted for. So they were not able to take the same route as the Bushes did.
Well, Chloe, I do feel that you and I may have done the very last interview ever done about Sox the cat. It's a dangerous thing to say, but here in 2020, I just sort of feel like this may be the last time journalism returns to look at Sox the cat. So I'm proud that it was with you, Chloe Bryan, deputy editor of Mashable's shopping section, covering tech and lifestyle products, possibly including Sox, previously a culture reporter for Mashable. Thanks for joining us today.
Thank you so much.
All right. And so we're done here. And let me just say, yes, we did a show about Sox in the middle of all kinds of national and international crises. But our thought was, yeah, maybe you did need something as comforting as the act of pulling a pair of really nice socks over your feet with all their nerve endings and bones and joints. So I hope we got your mind off things a little bit for an hour. We'll be back on Friday.
And I want, yes, I do what you got. Talk to me, baby.